Market Watch is proudly brought to you by TopSport, home of the TopSport betting multi. Gamble responsibly. Call 1800 858 858. G'day everyone, welcome to the latest edition of the Keeping Watch podcast. It's proudly brought to you by TopSport, home of the best multis, remember. And of course, the usual suspects are in attendance. I'm talking about Test cricket player number 400 for Australia, Bradley James Haddon. I'm talking about the top seed up there at TopSport, Tristan Merlehan. How are we, gentlemen?
Morning all. Mate, looks Tristan like he's got some beautiful weather up there. Down here in Sydney, I tell you what, Jimmy, you now get up early, go do your gym workout, get it out of the way. I could say anything today. I went to go to the gym this morning. I got a coffee next to the heat of the start. When my mates turned up, we had three coffees, no running, no gym, no nothing. It was too cold. So I'm three coffees in and it's 9 o'clock. So look out today. Mate, I hope you're enjoying the nice weather up there, Tristan.
Yeah, I am. It's we had a bit of ordinary weather for Magic Round, but it's come back to the usual beautiful Queensland up here. We got a couple of blue patches of blue sky up in the offering. We got a big racing now. We've got Zaki going around in the Doomben Cup, so hopefully the track holds up. We had to move that last week, but yeah, no, it's just good to see Hads, because probably the last 3 weeks he'd been under the weather with COVID, backing up from his trip to Wagga. So he's up and about today, three coffees, and yeah, very excited to hear what he has to say. There's plenty to chat about too.
You know, the other reason he's up and about is Canberra Raiders finally had a go this year and put in a very good performance at Magic Round. So I'd imagine, as shocked as you were pleased by that performance, Bradley.
I don't know about shock, Jimmy. Mate, I think the Raiders have been playing well under a lot of injuries over the last couple of weeks. What I was shocked about the Raiders, I don't know if you noticed number 25, I think it was. It looked like they brought Simon Wolford out of retirement from 120 years ago. What about the debut from his son, Zach? He looked exactly the same as Simon, talked exactly the same. He's a little bit quicker out of dummy half. But, yeah, what a debut that was from young Wolford to get the Raiders over the line.
Germ Jr., they call him. And apparently not a bad tipster when it comes to horses. But anyway, that might be a separate story. What was also a somber note on Sunday, and it's just incredible what's happened in the cricket world. And Brad, it's another one of your ex-teammates. It's another one of your colleagues at Fox Sports. But the shocking news that Andrew Symonds had been killed in a single car accident. All sorts of distressing stories around the fact his dog stayed with him, tried to be revived. That couldn't happen. I don't know how word filtered through to you, but it seems strange we're doing it so quickly again after a great mentor of yours in Rod Marsh and another colleague and teammate in Shane Warne. But give us your thoughts on the passing of Andrew Symonds and maybe some memories of your time playing with the great Roy.
Yeah, first and foremost, I'm devastated. Jim, I was close to Andrew through my playing days, and that relationship continued out of cricket as a friend and a colleague at Fox Sports. So my thoughts go out to his close family and friends, his kids, Chloe and Will. I feel for them. But Andrew Symonds he was loved. He was one of those teammates that you wanted next to you all the time. You see today in the modern game, you see it a lot when teams warm up and they interact with the opposition. Andrew Symonds had none of that. He said, no, 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 we're here to do a job today. I'll open my esky and I'll have a beer with anyone you like after the game, but I'm not here to talk to you now. And I think another story it sums up Andrew is, you remember in the 2007 World Cup, just before we left, he tore his bicep. So he was 50-50. About going on that tournament. But we took him. One, he's such a great team man, and he did all his rehab, so they thought he'd get up in time for the back half of the tournament where it counted, and he's someone you want around the group. But I remember we're going fishing, so we're all getting out. We've had a couple of days off in the West Indies, and Simo's coming back from a bicep curl, so we've got the rods and you got your hats and everything ready to go. And Simo's walking down the hill with an esky. He's walked on the, and we're going, mate, you're right. He goes, yeah, you've got to have a couple of beers while you're fishing and be on a strain. and said, well, you don't have to twist our arm, right? So we've gone out fishing, we've come back. We probably had one or four too many, but we had a good day catching some mahi-mahi. And you know how sports science in the game, he's on a really strict regime to get back. And the physio sort of got us at the front deck and said, what are you doing? Roy, you can't be doing this. You're on a tight schedule to get by. We've got a World Cup to win for Australia. He just looked the physio in the eye and said, mate, what you've got to understand as well, he's un-Australian to go fishing without having a beer. So he just sort of tapped him on the shoulder and kept walking. And the physio looked in like he had Haydos and everyone on the boat, Gilchrist. And he just sort of looked at him and he goes, well, Roy makes a really good point. It would have been un-Australian not to have a beer while we went fishing. But that was the man. Once you're his mate, he was loyal forever.
Did you have a standout performance from him? When a lot of people talk about the 143 in the 2003 World Cup, but do you remember a standout performance?
Yeah, I do. And it's not in the white ball game. That's where he made his name with his athleticism and the power hitting that he brought to the game. But mine was the 2006 Ashes at the MCG. It was his first 100. And the one thing, Roy, he was a laid-back character, but he wanted to be accepted as a test cricketer. And there's 90,000. It was against England, who he loved playing against England. And he brought that 100 up with his great mate, Matthew Hayden. I don't know if you remember the embrace. You've got 110 kilos jumping at you. We know Roy's got a good shoulder charge on him from all the streakers that he's put a hole in the past as well. But he's just jumped up and embraced Matthew Hayden, hit his shoulder into his head. He probably gets 6 weeks in rugby league and left a bit of a cut on Matty Hayden's head from the helmet. But that moment there, just to me, he's there with his great mate, Matty Hayden. They've grown up together. They've swam 3Ks offshore when they've sunk their boat. But that moment with your best mate and just then just realising I belong at Test cricket, that was my favourite cricket memory of Roy.
Yeah, and that was actually my favourite as well. Like just seeing that elation in his face, because I think it was one of those ones where he was pigeonholed as a short form cricketer, and to go out there and do it, and he picked up some crucial wickets and he lifted up the fielding at so many massive times. He was just such a, being a Queenslander and Gold Coast boy as well. He played his junior cricket on the Gold Coast. It was fantastic to see someone that probably was before his time. If he was 10 years later, where we've got all these domestic T20 tournaments around the world, would we have seen him play to the level he did at that Test cricket? And it was just fantastic to see him succeed to the level he did in all of those formats, and just such sad news when it filtered through Sunday morning.
You're right, Tristan. He was before his time in the power game, the athleticism he had, but he was also played in the wrong era the way he enjoyed himself after the game. So from an athletic point of view, from a personality point of view, which we all love Andrew Symons for, that era there, we could debate about which era he'd best fit in for hours, but he'd be sorely missed. He's a beloved friend, and as we said, our thoughts go out to his family, especially his kids, Chloe and Will.
Why did Ponting back him so much, mate? He did that. And you know, he ended up repaying that faith, but that was clear that it was a Ponting call. And he maybe got opportunities that perhaps other players wouldn't.
Yeah, it's also the sign of the man. Roy was ultra, ultra talented. He was as athletic as you'll ever see. He was a match winner. The one thing he did is win games. But I think the one thing Ricky Ponting senior, he's a great judge of character, was just that loyalty. You know when Andrew Symons got your back, he's got your back 24/7. It's not just when you're on the cricket field, or it's the little phone calls you used to get from him just out of the blue. And you get on the phone and go, g'day, Albert. How's the family? Good. Where are you? Barra fishing, right by. Just checking if you're good. So it was just that loyalty that Ricky's seen. And once you've got Andrew Symons as a mate, you've got him forever. And that showed on the cricket field. He was the one of the teammates everyone wanted to play for. You want an Andrew Symons in your team standing right beside you when you're under pressure. And that's what Ricky Ponting seen a lot earlier than everyone else.
Yeah, so condolences, as you say, to Andrew's family. A very, very sad story. 46 years of age. So dry with his commentary with Fox, which gave him a whole new audience. And, just a very, you know, talk about tragedy a lot. This is a tragic situation. Now, one of your favourite topics, Bradley, is England cricket. So I'm going to start it with this. An Englishman, an Australian and a New Zealander walk into a national administration's office and all three of them walk out with a job. What's going on? We've had Brendan McCullum start as the test coach. Matthew Mott has been confirmed as the short form coach. The CEO, Tom Harrison, has walked away. Chris Silverwood's been sacked as coach. Joe Root, even though he was named as skipper for the upcoming series, of course, we know that Ben Stokes is taking over there. When looking from afar at English cricket, what do you see thus far?
Yeah, I think Rob Key's been brave, but I also think that there needed to be change. He had a test team that's hit rock bottom. I think they'd struggle a little bit with the identity of what style the game that they wanted to play. And I think that's one thing Brendan McCullum will bring to the team. He'll bring a really clear mindset on around what cricket and what style of game he wants his England test team to play. Then Matthew Mott, that's an interesting one for me. I thought they'd actually go an Englishman for that second coaching appointment. You had someone there like Paul Collingwood, who has been successful. I think he's the most capped one-day player for England. He's a good style of fella. He's got a relationship with Brendan McCullum. I've seen he's staying on as assistant. But Matthew Mott, when you look at it, it looks a strange decision on the outside. But then you had a closer look. The England one-day team are in a very similar position as the Australian women's team when he took over. They'd won the World Cup. England had done that. They're at the top of the tree. But what he did, he evolved this team to a powerhouse of women's cricket. He won 26 consecutive one-day games. He kept raising the bar on the style that they want to play, challenge their athletes, not just to be good, but be great and leave a long-lasting legacy. In the end, he won one-day comps. He just recently dominated. From go to woe, Australia never looked like losing that 2020 World Cup in New Zealand. They had a lot of injury and COVID cases through, but their style stayed consistent. And so from someone with his pedigree, it looks a really good decision. But to me, I was just shocked that they didn't go for one English coach.
Yeah, and I think that's fascinating. And I think it's obviously the English side were out here playing in the girls' cricket over the summer as well. So I'd imagine there's probably been some conversations and the board's seen a lot what they like out of that. Do you think there's an element of bringing something new to the cricket game? Like, as you say, the white ball side's been dominant for England for a while, but they couldn't quite get the job done in the T20 World Cup. Do you think you might be able to bring some new things in from probably outside of the square that maybe haven't been in the men's game for a while to take some learnings across from the women's side of things?
Yeah, I think the one thing, the reason Matthew Mott's there is to evolve this England team, this white ball team into greatness. I think he'll challenge the group enough to oversee the style of play there. He's got some big decisions there to make also. Owen Morgan's coming to the back end of his career, and he's been really influential in changing the style of play that he wanted this England 2020 team to play. So I think the England media they'll expect a lot from Matthew Mott straight away. They'll expect results. This team's at the top of the game. I think Brendan McCullum will get a little bit of leeway because they're at rock bottom, and he'll have time to develop his style. But the one thing that they will need to do, and it's a brave decision by Rob Key, what happens if this doesn't work? He's come in straight away in his first appointment. He's been brave. He's been really clear on what he wants to change with England cricket. But you know the media over there is ruthless. So if this doesn't work, you've got a Kiwi and an Aussie coach, and you know the media can turn really, really quick.
As opposed to the much more benign media here in Australia, of course. So just on that, Brad, I think I'm right in saying it's been a long while, nearly a decade, since Matty Mott has coached men's cricket, been coaching women's cricket. Is there a difference? Do you have to approach it differently on the field, off the field?
There obviously be different some differences in the skill level and the style of game that power game or things that the tactics in women's game to men. But the one thing he did do with the women's game, he evolved that women's game. He turned a really good team into arguably one of the greatest cricket teams that Australia have had. The power game that they played, not only just the 11, but he evolved that whole game. You see now a lot of the 2020 Big Bash with the women's, that they're playing a power game. They're playing a game that's attractive to watch. They're more athletic. And that's got to do a lot with what Matthew Mott's put into that team. So I think that's what he'll bring to the England team. He'll bring a really clear vision and involve this team and challenge, not only just to be comfortable with where they are, but to take this team to greatness.
Okay, I want to ask you about the Australian tour of Sri Lanka. And Tristan, I'll start with you. From a markets point of view, and this sort of goes to the discussion what we're about to have, do we have markets up yet for Australia in Sri Lanka?
No, we don't. And that's something we pride ourselves on, getting the markets up nice and early, trying to be first to the market and a lot of those things. But there's just so much uncertainty over the tour. There's so much uncertainty around the teams and who's going to line up, that at this stage we are still a little bit apprehensive to get those markets up. So we've obviously got a big IPL on at the moment. But yeah, at the moment with the Sri Lanka Aussie series, for a variety of reasons, the traders have decided just to hold off for a little bit.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. There's a bit of unrest at the moment in Sri Lanka with, I see recently that the Prime Minister's house got burnt down. So yeah, let's hope for cricket's sake that they got the opportunity to go to Sri Lanka. It'll be also Chris Silverwood's. He's taken over the Sri Lankan cricket team as head coach. So he'll have some good inside knowledge of the Australians after coaching the Ashes out here last time. He had a good look at our batters. They spent a lot of time out in the centre when he was coaching. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting see what happens over the next couple of weeks. So I hope Australia do go. It's a beautiful place in the world. But first and foremost, we've got to worry about the player's safety.
Yeah, certainly. Does their Prime Minister tackle kids at junior soccer as well?
Oh, Jimmy, how many weeks would he got there?
Oh, that was 8 weeks, wasn't it? High, late. Yeah, GOMO, very, very lucky to avoid a charge coming out of that one. So
can't trust those Cronulla supporters.
That's right, up, Cronulla. All right, mate, let's get to the IPL. This is your bread and butter. You've been really good for the punters thus far. Now, let's have a look at the table and how it relates to markets here, Tristan, because I think Brad said, was it last week or maybe the week before, Delhi Capitals, he was really keen on. They've forced their way into the top four, but we've got a couple of sides that have played all 14 of their games, but plenty of games remaining, and some of them are absolutely crucial. What's the market now for overall winner?
Yeah, no, well, Hads was very bullish about Delhi for the last couple of weeks, actually, and they were around about the $16 mark there to win the event. When we spoke last week, and I suggested it'd be good to have a little wager on them on the back of Brad's strong push, because if they do make the top four, then you're going to get into a position where they're around about $5. So they've halved in price in the last week. They're into $7.50. That's because there still is a little bit of uncertainty whether they do make that top four. They do have to have a few things go their way this weekend. They play against Mumbai on Sunday night, midnight, and they're $1.70 to win. If they win that game, they will in all likelihood get into the top four. They have a net run rate that's superior to Bangalore, who are also on 14 points with them. Now, Bangalore take on the Titans, who are already safe and sound in the finals, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of those players wanting to press their claims to be picked in the final series. So the Titans are $1.84, Bangalore $2 in that game. So they're the sides. If either of those sides win, they will lock themselves into that top four. You've got a logjam of three teams, the Kolkata Knight Riders, the Punjab Kings, and the Sunrisers Hyderabad, sitting there one game off the pace. So if there was a couple of slip-ups, there is an outside possibility that one of those teams can force their way in, but you would think that's quite unlucky. So unlikely, should I say. The Royals are $1.74 against Chennai, $2.13, and then Sunrisers Punjab are 202 and 181. So the big difference with a lot of these dead rubber games, you could say at times, there's so much money on the offering for next season and playing themselves into squads for next year that there's never a dead rubber game in the IPL. Yeah,
it's a good point. I'm just having a look here. You see Delhi play the last place Mumbai, so you'd expect that they would win there. And the interesting one for me is Bangalore v the Titans. The Titans have already qualified. Bangalore got to this stage without Virat Kohli contributing. Is this the moment Virat Kohli steps up and they knock off the first place Titans? If they do that and Delhi win, I see the upset this week. I think Chennai will beat the Royals. I think the Titans and Lakhmau are always in. I think Rajasthan Royals will stay on 16. I think they'll get beaten by the Chennai. And I think Delhi and Bangalore will both win their game. So it's going to come down to quotient there. So it's an exciting game. Bangalore are interesting because Virat Kohli has not fired a shot. He's had probably his worst IPL, whether he's tired, he's out of form. But he is box office. And these are the games that your big players stand up. Delhi, I think, are just starting to come together at the right time. Mitch Marsh is over COVID and everything he had. He was dynamic the other night. David Warner's been consistent. So I think we're going to see three teams on 16 points. Bangalore, Delhi and the Royals, who I think will get knocked off by Chennai. So have we got anything there, Tristan?
Yeah, well, I think with that in mind, it's vital now for the punters out there to have a look at some of those, I suppose, high variance type options, because for Bangalore to push themselves into the finals, they either need Delhi to lose, which they're playing Mumbai, so that they can't bank on that. They've got to get a result and they've got to force their net run rate up by 0.6 to cover the opposition. So what I'll be looking for is some of those options, like your players to score a century, to score in quick time, these sort of options, because they're going to have to play a very aggressive brand of cricket to try to increase their net run rates. Have you got any ideas there for the punters where you think, you know, we could look at the heads?
Mate, what I've got, what about a multi? Royals to lose against Chennai. Get your pen ready, Jimmy. You'll pay your house off. Delhi to win and Bangalore to win.
Right. So that works out at 7:15 there. So you've got Bangalore to win. You've got Chennai to beat the Royals, who were $2.13 by themselves. So it's been a very, very strong push from heads for the outsider in that game. And then Delhi are $1.68. So $7.15, that will see every single one of those sides finish on 16 points, which will make a very interesting final game.
Brad, I know you're the mathematician amongst the three of us. So there's the massive difference in the net run rate. Give us an understanding of what margin of victory must be for Bangalore to get ahead of the Royals, like, and their loss. Like, if we assume their loss is a minor one, but then they're, you know, give us an understanding. Is it in 15? Do you know that?
No, I tell you, this is where your analyst comes into play. And this is why the last round of competitions are, anything can happen. There's a different pressure that goes on. You can go into the game thinking, okay, if we win this game, we're in the final. But also now you're going into this game, we have to win this game. But because of Royals have lost or Bangalore have won, we've got to score these runs in 13 overs. So all of a sudden, then the toss becomes different because you go, okay, where's our strength? What do we want to do? Do we want to back that we can bowl them out in X amount of overs? They don't get our runs. So what you see a lot happening with these scenarios, you see them sending the opposition in. Then by the time they get off, they back their batsmen to say, we have to score these in 13.2 overs to go in front of A, B or C. But that also brings a different pressure
to
the game. So that's why these last rounds are so hard to pick. So to answer your question, Jimmy, what normally happens is that they'll have their analysts, and you need to play these games all at the same time. I think so. People don't get an advantage.
Yeah, I think that's something we see in something like the EPL or in the World Cup, when you've got the last round of fixtures all on at the same time, because it plays massively into the hands of Delhi, really. Like, they are, if they win, they're in. But it's probably one of these games now where the Royals will know what they've got to do after Bangalore put their result on the board. So if Bangalore get a win, their net rate run rate will be locked in. And then there's a chance that Rajasthan can lose the game, but lose it within X number, and then they'll push themselves into the final. So that's a really crucial item to that, because that might bring Chennai right into the betting. If Bangalore win and they win with, you know, a run rate that doesn't push them past, Rajasthan might not actually go out there to, not that they'll go out to lose the game, but they might only need to chase 160 of the 180 to force them way into the finals. So that's something be really key, because there might be some opportunities as punters to be able to take advantage of some of that value, particularly when it'll be happening in 2 or 3 in the morning.
So to be clear about that, game 67 is Royal Challengers Bangalore against Gujarat Titans. Then the following day, we've got the Rajasthan Royals against Chennai Super Kings. And then the following day, there is the Mumbai Indians up against the Delhi Capitals. The other game, the last game, is inconsequential. But it's a very good point that you guys make around, you know, what exactly these teams will know that they need to make the finals. And maybe there's an opportunity for the IPL in the future to have it something like the EPL, where you've got all the last games being played at the same time. I mean, the good thing about that is that we know that India and Indians in general don't like having a bet on the cricket. So it's not like they need to worry about that at all, Brad.
I tell you what it does do, though. Yes, you can play all the games at the same time, but on the flip side of that, Jimmy, it adds another excitement level.
Sure.
Like, we could be going into the last game with Delhi and Mumbai thinking, okay, if they win, they're in. But what about turning up to the game? This is where you see the true champions of the game too, how you handle pressure, how you behave under pressure. Oh, no, by the way, boys, we have to win today, but if we're going to bat first or bat second, you've got to score 190 runs and bowl, they can't get any more than 160. But if we bat second, we've got to score our runs in 13 overs. So that's another excitement level. And from your point of view, Tristan, it's another element to the betting on the game.
It does. And just even during our little chat now, I've just pinged the traders a couple little messages, because there's a few things I know to be monitoring tonight when the game's in play. So it's something, yeah, there's different ways to look at it, but it does create those extra elements. And I think it creates talking points throughout the game, talking points in the lead up. It makes you change your batting order. It's a fascinating outcome. And Jimmy, you said the last game's inconsequential. It probably is inconsequential, but if both Delhi and Bangalore do happen to get beaten, then the winner of that probably makes the final. So there's that outside remote chance as well that they're still a rough chance of making the finals too.
Yeah, rough, very rough indeed. Brad, are you doing any work with, just a little bit of broking or trading with Top Sport over the course of this IPL? I could see you in there with the glasses on and the pencil sharpened.
Yeah, I started, Jimmy, but once I got too many numbers in front of me, I started to make bad decisions when I got under pressure. So I was like, when I batted, I was trying to move things forward at 100 miles an hour, and the numbers just couldn't keep up with me.
Hads did come in for a quick session, and it was one of those ones where you have our strut, and we you know, you get a lead or you fall behind, and Hads are just, let's push, let's stand this for double, let's take everyone on, let's move this day along. So it was a bit different to my mentality, where I like to push a quick single and defend the last ball of the over. But no, he might fit in. He's got a very good numbers brain.
Well, that's what having three coffees standing by the heater at the cafe rather than going for your run will do for you, right? Bradley, no comment?
I've got nothing to say there. I know is toes were warm. I didn't want to get outside today.
Fair enough. Hey, boys, great chat. Really enjoyed it. Really interesting what's coming up with the IPL, and we watch the English space with interest as well. Have a great week, and we'll be back with the Keeping Watch podcast next week.
See you guys.